Happy New Year! I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Craig Wilson. It's Friday, the 11th of January, 2013.
Welcome to the first Talk Central podcast of the new year, brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's very best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we chat about the highlights from CES in Las Vegas and the other big news of the week.
And as always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser. And Craig and I will pick our product or app of the week. We'll be back right after we've paid these bills.
Inbox open. Do you want to enlarge your... No? Do you want a bigger... Sis? Hot singles waiting for my... What? Gross, man.
Don't get ambushed. Call for backup. Get hosted archiving and mail protection from Vox Telecom. Protect and archive your mail for half the price of an on-site server. Hosted archiving and mail protection from Vox Telecom. Backup for your business. SMS 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Welcome to Talk Central. I'm Duncan MacLeod. How's it, Craig? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, Duncan.
Happy New Year to you.
And to you.
Cool. I think it's going to be a good one.
Oh, absolutely. So much exciting news ahead.
In fact, it's been the busy start to the year. It's usually fairly quiet at this time of the year with everyone still on holiday, etc.
Indeed, only 2 weeks in and there's lots of news. Of course, quite a lot of this news coming out of CES. That's the big consumer electronics show that's held in Las Vegas every year.
Absolutely. It always kicks off the year at this time and gives us tech journalists something to write about when it's usually fairly quiet.
Indeed, yeah. And plenty to write about this year.
And yeah, lots out of CES. I kind of got the impression it wasn't as... there wasn't quite as much news coming out of CES this year as last year.
No, indeed.
It was also kind of a repeat of last year. A lot of focus on television again, like last year. Although the focus this year has really been around the so-called 4K resolution television.
Well, this is what seems to happen with these events too. There seems to be one particular topic that emerges as the it topic for the year. But what's also interesting is seeing who's not there and what doesn't get talked about. And one of the things is, with all this talk of TVs, one of the things we haven't seen is talk of 3D.
Yes.
Yeah. 3D was sort of hyped in the last couple of years, and now there's the move is to this higher resolution 4K screens that we've been talking about.
Well, I guess the TV manufacturers saw an opportunity to make higher margins out of 3D screens in recent years, and I guess that opportunity to make margins has gone away. And I guess I was reading, I think on The Verge or one of the American news websites, someone was just suggesting that people just buy TVs now and they happen to come with 3D, even though the consumer's perhaps not even looking for 3D. They just get it as part of the deal.
Indeed, but they're certainly not the motivation for them buying the set in the first place.
Yeah, so. And there's certainly not big margins in selling 3D like they were a few years ago.
No, absolutely. And I my stance on this, I'm pretty underwhelmed by 3D. I think it's more gimmick than anything else, and I certainly wouldn't deliberately buy a set, also because of the content, with all of these sorts of things and the new formats. And this is something we're going to see with the 4K too, is that the it's about what content you've actually got available, and if it means reinvesting in things or buying something that perhaps may not work in a few years' time, a 3D movie or whatever that works in a certain format, I'm a little bit reluctant. I just don't think it adds enough to the viewing experience, frankly, especially for home. I can sort of see some of the appeal for cinema, where you're making an event of it. But I don't want to watch the news in 3D.
Yeah, indeed. I think there's possibly more of a selling case for 4K. Upscaling technology is pretty good. Upscaling 2D to 3D is really crap. Upscaling 1080p video content to 4K, I've seen it in action on Sony's top-end 84-inch 4K television, and it's quite impressive. The thing that really benefits 4K is the fact that you can come out with much larger screens.
Absolutely.
So you can really have a TV in your lounge without seeing any pixelation, even in a relatively small space, and have a large TV to make it a more immersive experience. And quite frankly, I think anyone who says that 42 inches or 46 inches or even 55 inches is more than big enough for the home environment simply hasn't had a chance to sit down in front of a 4K 80. 5 or 100-inch TV.
Well, and this
really,
is the point.
Really felt the immersiveness of it.
Indeed, but given the prices, it's going to be a long time before those become commonplace.
So
certainly, we're seeing the 46 and the 50-inch HD TVs becoming the sort of new standard. It's no longer the 40 or the 42s.
That's right. 46 is the bare entry level now, and I think sort of mid range is now around the 55-inch mark.
Indeed.
And the high end is sort of pushing 64. Even in Samsung's case, their high end is 75 inches. Their top end LED at the moment. Interestingly, Samsung announced a 110-inch 4K TV at at CES. I'd hate to know how much that's going to cost, given Sony's 84-inch costs 280,000 rand. So
you may have to sell your imaginary beach house to pay for it.
Yes, yes, indeed, to buy my imaginary 4K 110-inch Samsung 4K LED TV. Never mind
finding things to watch on it.
Never mind the OLED version thereof, which would probably quadruple the price again.
But which wouldn't take two people to carry.
No, indeed.
We didn't see that much on the OLED displays. I saw there was the prototype, was it Sony's, of the OLED 4K screen. But we didn't see that much of the OLED this year.
4K OLED is where we're going. I think those TVs are going to... that's the TV the market's going to be wanting 5 years from now.
Indeed. And so probably so light you can just sort of hang it on the wall.
Yeah. I mean, I was at CES last year. Unfortunately, didn't go this year. But last year, had a close look at LG's OLED TV at the time. And unbelievably thin. It's really quite amazing what they can do with OLED technology. Both Samsung and LG promised OLED TVs in 2012, and neither of them brought them to market.
Indeed.
Now, finally, they're coming. LG has actually put a date on it. They're going to launch their OLED 55-inch television in the North American market in March at a price of $12,000 US. So you're looking at, with import duties and taxes, you're looking at about...
$150K, probably?
No, probably about $120,000, $130,000, I'd imagine. Yeah, depends on how much retail markup there is.
Sure.
Not exactly a mass market product yet.
No.
But expect those prices to fall 40%, 50%.
These are indications of the way things are going, certainly. Of course, televisions weren't the only things to come out of CES this year or to be hyped and talked about. One of the other ones that was interesting was a Kickstarter project that's now sort of crossed over into the real world, and this is the Pebble Watch. Which, of course, is a sort of e-ink display watch that links to your smartphone via Bluetooth, whether that's an iPhone or an Android device. And this is a particularly interesting idea, I think, because the notion is that you can get certain information then from the watch without getting your phone out of your pocket. And this may sound trivial, but you know, you can imagine uses for it. You know, you're, say, cooking a meal and your phone rings and your hands are dirty and you can see on the watch face who's calling and then decide whether or not you actually want to answer. Or, of course, if you're a sportsman, if you're, you know, a runner or you're on a bike, you can get information from your GPS tracking device or your app that you're using to track your distance and this sort of thing without actually having to get your phone out. But whether we like it or not, clearly a lot of people did. It went on to be the best performing Kickstarter project to date.
It was something like $6 million that was raised, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah, more than $6 million raised. And I think they only actually wanted to raise
$100,000.
Mm. So these are now actually going to be out and available before the end of the month, I think, for about $150, if I remember.
$150, yeah, and they're on pre-order already. And it's at getpebble.com, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so, yeah.
It looks very cool. I think I may be buying one.
It looks very cool indeed,
Yeah. It's a space that, funny enough, I think Apple should have got into.
Absolutely.
The fact that they haven't done a watch yet just amazes me. I mean...
Well, we've seen people try and make their own Apple Watch, right?
We've seen
people using the Nano and you get dedicated straps for it. But it's not quite the same thing. You feel like if Apple were to really commit to the idea, they'd perhaps bring something a little bit different to it.
Mm.
And you could have some really, really fantastic results that integrate well with existing devices.
And it doesn't have to be an expensive product. I mean, it's something they could probably bring to market for the order of $150 and still have the legendary Apple profit margin stuck on it.
Sure, treat it more like an Apple, like a Shuffle. Or a Nano, and that sort of price.
And they'd sell millions.
Yeah. Well, we'll wait and see. I look forward to actually seeing one of these Pebbles in the flesh, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, let's move on a little bit from CES, not entirely, since there was quite a lot of activity around this particular subject at CES this year. But a few days before CES began, of course, Mark Shuttleworth, the South African billionaire who went into space on the money he made from selling his Cape Town startup to an American security company called VeriSign. He went on then to start Ubuntu, the Linux operating system, done very well with that. And now he announced about a week ago now that he's going to be bringing Ubuntu to smartphones, which is a really interesting development.
It is, but what's interesting too is the timeline. You know, there's a lot of talk about it now, and it's certainly generated a lot of hype. But the official timelines are that we won't see it for months or even as much as until late this year or perhaps early next.
We won't see it on smartphones, on dedicated smartphone hardware until next year.
No, indeed.
Although you will be able to apparently install it on the Google Nexus device in the coming months.
Indeed. I wonder what Google thinks about this.
Indeed. Well, Ubuntu and Google have traditionally had a very close working relationship, you know.
Sure, and Android's sort of based on the same...
it's based on Linux
on
as well.
The same Linux sort of kernels. And it's a great move, though. I think more competition in this space isn't a bad thing. We've seen it with Windows Phone as well. I think, you know, more OSs just mean more choices for consumers, and it forces them to work a little harder to really do innovative things.
Yeah, I do wonder what they're hoping to achieve out of this, because I do think they're coming to the market far too late if they want if they're going to try and get a mass market share and really compete with the main players, namely Microsoft, Google, and Apple. I just can't see them getting the sort of market share penetration that that particularly Google has got now with Android.
And you have to wonder, where exactly they're expecting to make money off this. I mean, are they going to enter the hardware market, which is not a market they know or have really played in very much? Are they going to build dedicated Ubuntu handsets, or are they going to do things, as they've said with the Nexus, where it's an option for other handsets, in which case how will this work, and you know, what will the sort of fees be? It's curious to see, but the little things you've seen, you know, there's a couple of teaser videos online.
The operating system itself looks very interesting. It looks very good. I mean, it's early days, but it looks like they've done some amazing work already just to get it to the stage it is now.
Indeed.
Anyway, I'm going to, as soon as I have some supported hardware here in the office, I'm going to be putting Ubuntu on it as soon as the software is available for download and playing around with it.
Indeed, this is also the only way to see how it actually performs, maybe, is to use it.
I mean, Linux has always been for the enthusiast market. They've, you know, it's been guys who installed the operating system on PCs that probably came shipped with Windows.
Sure.
And install it because they like to tinker and they like open source and the values behind open source software. So maybe there's a market of 2, 3, 4% of the
world. Well, we've seen from the Android market, there's certainly room for those who like to tinker. You know, there's so many custom ROMs and so on that you can get for Android devices. There's definitely interest from people in being able to really get drill down and properly customize these devices. So perhaps that's the space Ubuntu hopes to play in.
The other thing that really interested me was the fact that you're going to be able to load Ubuntu onto your Android smartphone in a separate partition. I'm not sure if that's the correct description.
Sort of like a dual boot.
It's like a dual boot type environment, so that when you can then use it as a PC. So when you go into the office, you put it into a docking station.
Right.
And then connect it up to a monitor, and there you have a fully functional PC running a full version of the Ubuntu Linux operating system, unplug it from the dock, and you go back to your Android smartphone.
Sure. And there is a good point in this. There is value to be had in terms of being able to use it seamlessly for both purposes, as opposed to having to switch devices, but also, you know, the single investment for something that you could use for both purposes, and the fact that, you know, most of our high-end smartphones at the moment are so incredibly powerful. If you think back to the clunky desktops we had 10 years ago,
yes,
this makes a great deal of sense. I think particularly in a market like the African market, you know, if you're a young entrepreneur and you can have your computer in your pocket that's also your phone, pop in somewhere, plug it in when you need a full keyboard or similar, this may have legs, although of course we've seen similar things. Motorola have tried this with docks and things that essentially turn a phone into a laptop, and those have barely made a splash at all. But
it's very interesting, and I wonder if Microsoft is thinking along similar ways, because it could make sense down the line as the hardware in these phones gets better and better. And Mark Shuttleworth made the point that it's just now that the hardware in these phones is getting good enough to actually run full-scale desktop operating systems, but it's going to improve massively in the years ahead. You've got quad-core processors in these phones already. Gig, 2 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs probably will be the high-end smartphone for next year. So you know, it might make sense for Microsoft, perhaps one of its partners like HTC or Nokia, to start shipping handsets that hold both Windows Phone for the use on the phone and the full Windows 8 operating system on the device for docking, like Shuttleworth is proposing with doing with Ubuntu on Android devices.
Indeed, I wouldn't be surprised to see this sort of solution at all. Yeah.
Going to be interesting to watch that space. Cool. Let's move on, Craig. We are running out of time quite quickly. Just very briefly, you had some interesting insights this week into the White Spaces Spectrum trial that's taking place down in Cape Town. This is really about taking broadcasting spectrum that's being used by broadcasters, or rather the white spaces in between that, the guard bands in that spectrum to prevent interference between channels. And using that spectrum for delivering wireless broadband.
Indeed, and I think this is a fascinating project. So what we've got is a trial that's about to kick off any day now, that will see 10 schools within a 10-kilometer radius of the Tygerberg Hospital getting internet service over this white spaces spectrum. So we're looking at speeds of sort of 5 megabit per second down to 10, which is, you know, in keeping with the sort of fastest lines you can, fixed lines you can get from Telkom at the moment, commercially at least. You know, obviously they're testing a faster network, but, you know, these are sort of in keeping with the kind of speeds we're seeing. What's interesting too, though, is it works in a similar sense to, you know, it'll work over Wi-Fi or over WiMAX or over some sort of existing technology. What's novel about this is the spectrum that's being used. And as you rightly say, it's these guard bands that used to exist between television stations, or still do. Yes, you know, when you tune in a television and there are these gaps between stations. stations. This was to prevent interference. And the idea is that, you know, spectrum's finite, and we've only got so much of it to use. And there's great demand, especially now from the mobile operators who want to use it for next generation broadband and these sorts of things, that there's all this spectrum that's really lying fallow and that just isn't being used. But the project's incredibly complicated, actually. I had a wonderful conversation with Councillor William Stuckey from ICASA about this project. And, you know, one of the challenges is that they have to make sure that the frequency in question isn't contested at all, and the ones they're using. So this involves an enormous amount of data crunching. You've got to look at towers as far as 1,000 kilometers away that could possibly cause interference. And you really need a database of every frequency being used by every tower in the country. Which is how Google, which is one of the sponsors of this project, came to be involved, is that, you know, it's one of the few companies that has the computing power to actually handle this sort of database. Because also, as you use one of these frequencies and you bring one of these schools, you know, online, you then need to add that information to the database, because, of course, now whatever frequency the school is using will become unavailable. Anyway, this project, it is about to start, and we'll see what comes of it. It's going to run for 6 months, and the hope is that it will demonstrate to ICASA that it's possible to use these spaces without causing interference. So the one is, you know, to convince ICASA, and the other is to placate broadcasters who naturally are concerned that their signals are going to be messed with by these sorts of projects. And there's great potential for it, if it can work. And, you know, we'll certainly be watching this closely in months to come.
No, it's a very, very interesting story, and it deals with all sorts of advanced technologies like cognitive radio systems, etc. But rather than rehashing it all, go to check out Craig's article on Tech Central.
It's and, really... I have no doubt we'll be talking about it again in a month or so's time when the first results start to trickle through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe that Google and others are planning a big launch as well. So keep an eye on the site for all the latest on that and what happens. Cool. That takes care of the news. Craig, I think it's time to pick our winner and loser of the week. I'll go for the winner, shall I, since I picked it? And,
certainly.
And you can pick up the loser. The winner this week is Nokia. That might seem like a strange pick, but they... put out very good, or they put out financial numbers yesterday that really smashed analyst forecasts, and the share price was up almost 22% at one stage in New York. It closed up around 19% on the back of strong smartphone sales of the Lumia and the Asher range,
which has got to be delighting them.
Absolutely, and it might suggest that that perhaps people were getting too negative about Nokia, and that Stephen Elop's strategy may in fact starting to pay dividends for the company.
I've spoken to, you know, just casually, a lot of people I've spoken to, some serious sort of high end users, are very, very interested in Windows Phone and want to play with it and want to, you know, make it work. And, you know, the Asher range too is just a reminder that Nokia make excellent hardware. This is the one thing we've known for ages. They still make great handsets, and they make particularly good handsets in the mid-range. And this is where they sell the most. You know, obviously the Lumia is the attempt to try and regain some of the smartphone market that they'd all but lost you know, a year or two back. But they continue to make good devices, and they've got the patience and the wherewithal and the funds to you know, play the long game.
Yeah.
They're not going to disappear anytime soon.
So anyway, it's going to be a long road back to the top for Nokia, but a good week this week for them. And
yeah, they deserve the kudos.
I was a Nokia user for a very long time, and I could see myself going back to the brand again if they bring out that winning product.
Indeed.
And the Lumia 920 was pretty close.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Good. Loser of the week.
Well, our loser of this week is the Minister of Communications, Dina Pulley. There was a story at the end of last year, but that we've picked up again on this year. We're actually waiting for the Minister's response in light of this news, that she has not been successful in the lawsuit with ETV.
No.
ETV brought this lawsuit, if I recall, because the Minister wanted to assign Centec the role of picking...
the conditional access player for digital set-top boxes. It's really the encryption system that the set-top boxes for digital terrestrial television are going to use. These are the boxes you're going to need if you don't have DSTV to receive terrestrial broadcasts after they switch off analog broadcasts in 2015.
And, you know, if I remember, ETV and SABC had argued that they should be allowed to.
In fact, they were given the business. They were told that this is going to be the case by the previous minister, Roy Padiachi.
And in many instances, it makes sense, because they're the ones most affected by it. And yeah. They're the ones who have the most to lose if it's not properly handled.
Yes. Anyway, ETV took exception to this and argued that the minister was unlawful in her decision to appoint Sentek, and the judge found in favour of ETV, which now means the minister needs to decide whether or not she's going to file an application for leave to appeal. If she does, then unfortunately it means that digital terrestrial television is going to be delayed again. If she doesn't, I think her minister, her spokesman has hinted in an article we put together earlier this week that they may not actually file leave to appeal, that they're going to work with ICASA and with the broadcasters in coming up with a solution to the problem.
Well, given the looming deadline, this may well be the most sensible approach, even if it's not the most agreeable
even
to the
if,
minister.
Even if she doesn't want this, I think that perhaps filing application for leave to appeal would be the wrong approach, just because of the fact that tying it up again in the legal system, and it would probably take longer than it has in the High Court to go through an appeal, means that digital TV is going to be the loser, and South Africa will be the loser as a result, because they're not going to reassign the spectrum for broadband.
And the minister will lose too, because she'll be blamed for causing further delays to something that we've already seen countless delays to, and that, a deadline that's becoming increasingly unlikely to be met.
All right, very quickly, Craig, let's do our apps of the week. You want to kick us off?
Sure. My app this week is Couchsurfing. This is available for iOS and for Android devices, and only really relevant if you're a Couchsurfing user, but the app is so good it may actually encourage other people to sign up. In brief, Couchsurfing is a network that allows people who have a couch they are willing to let a traveler use to connect with travelers who are looking for said couch.
Sounds like something out of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It does a little. So, for example, if you're a student, say, and you are going on a European tour for a little while, and you don't really want to be staying in backpackers, or you don't really want to be staying in hotels because of the cost, you can put in a request with someone who's a Couchsurfing member and who has a couch available to sleep on their couch, exactly as it sounds. Now, I've hosted a lot of couch surfers over the last few years. I haven't done any surfing myself, actually, but one of the perks of doing about it this way is that you get to stay with someone who knows the city wherever you are, and generally the couch surfing community is quite welcoming and friendly and happy to show you around, which beats staying at a backpacker's anyway, not just from the cost, but just from the getting to know the city from an insider's point of view. Anyway, they've been on the web for years, and this is one of those interesting apps where really what you're seeing is a crossover from quite a successful website with over 2 million members at last count to now an app that supports and is kind of well suited to this, because aside from being able to respond to couch requests on the fly, you can use the messaging system to communicate with incoming visitors, or if you're a visitor, with some of the hosts you've lined up. And more importantly, the app is just really, really well done. It's got a really beautiful interface, incredibly simple to use.
How safe is it?
The actual couch surfing itself, well, like a lot of these sorts of networks, it's peer-reviewed. So, obviously it requires a modicum of common sense, but, people who have hundreds of excellent ratings from a wide range of people, generally speaking, can probably be trusted. I've got them in all of my hosting. I've only had one bad experience, and bad is perhaps a stretch.
What happened?
The person in question was just a little bit overly needy and not the most fun to stay with, but she moved on after a few days, and it was a minor hiccup in what's otherwise been a string of fascinating people, many of whom I still speak to. There's actually one in particular in New York who I spoke to last week.
Okay.
So it's great for meeting people, and it's also, of course, great for building your own sort of couchsurfing capital, so that when you go to another country, you've got places to stay yourself. Anyway, the app's great. It's free, and it's available in the Google Play Store or the App Store for Apple.
Great. Sounds excellent. I want to take a look at that. Craig, my pick of the week is Google Analytics. I think most of our listeners will know Google Analytics for the web.
And I'm sure some of them will be cheering along with us that there's now an app.
There's now an app for Android. It's been out for a couple of months, in fact. But the thing that really blows me away about the app is the real-time analytics. So you can actually see what's happening on your website, your blog, whatever it is, in real time. You can see where people are coming from. You can see how many people are on the site at any given time and what articles they're reading. It's really, really powerful. And you put something out there, you put a new piece out there, and then you push it out. I mean, we do it through Google News, through social media. We can actually see in real time what's going on, where traffic's coming from, who, which social network it's coming from, if we got linked, for example, to Slashdot earlier this week, which brought in quite a lot of traffic to one of our stories, and we could see in real time the people coming through Slashdot, and there was traffic coming from both Slashdot in the US and from Slashdot in Japan, and you can see in real time what people are doing, and it's a really powerful, very powerful tool if you work with websites.
So. And just fascinating, really. I think one of the challenges of it is not to spend all day looking at it.
Yes.
It's just so engaging. It's just so incredible to watch this, as you said, this data in real time, updated every few seconds.
It's unreal.
It's really, really fantastic.
And it's completely free of charge, which is the most amazing thing. It's the sort of functionality I really would have expected Google to charge for.
And it's the sort of functionality you'd really be prepared to pay for.
It is, absolutely. I'd pay for it.
You know, I'd pay $5 a month or something. Easily. Absolutely.
Easily. Mm. Easily.
Well, let's not tell them that it's hope it stays free.
No, Google, if you're listening. cool. Well, that's it for this week, Craig. We have run slightly over, but it is our first episode of the new year. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, send us a mail, info@techcentral.co.za, or leave a comment on the post. Until next week, from Craig Wilson and myself, Duncan McLeod, have a great week. Cheers.